Well, where do you go to find God? Where do you go to find God? Do you go to church? Well, you're here, right? I hope you can find God here. Do you go to nature, perhaps, to find God? Or to prayer? To the daily prayer or not so daily prayer? Perhaps that time of silence when you ask God to speak to you? Or do you go to work for justice and peace, or to serve others? Now, all those are places that we can go to find God. Or as someone once suggested, they're really places we can go so God can find you. But what happens when God just shows up? When God knocks at your door or taps you on the shoulder, what do you do then? What happens then? Well, you could do like Abraham does and say, "Welcome, come on in, make yourself at home." When Abraham had three strangers show up, he just said, "Stop and rest. Make yourself welcome. You are welcome here." He offers hospitality to God, just as Martha actually offers hospitality to Jesus. For Christianity, like Judaism before it, hospitality is profoundly important. It is no coincidence that we have a table here with a chalice, a basket, symbols of hospitality, of a meal, the things that we do for with and for other people. It is hospitality that is can be a deep and a holy practice that manifests the caring and inclusion that is at the heart of our faith. It is a kind of creating a space for a deep encounter, a place where God can meet you and you can meet God. And so we read that we have Abraham sitting around in the shade, and he looks up and he sees these three people nearby, evidently travelers, and he jumps up and welcomes them and presses them to accept, quote, "a little water to wash and refresh yourselves, a little bread so you can feel stronger." And so they accept, and then Abraham really gets going. He has Sarah make a heap of bread, and, you know, it says in our reading, three measures, but the Hebrew indicates three big measures. We're talking heaps of flour to make lots of bread and baked goods, whatever Sarah made of it. And he had a whole calf that he had slaughtered and prepared for them, and he served it with milk and with butter and all kinds of good things. He prepared a feast for these travelers. He prepared an eager offering for the strangers that showed up at his tent's door. It was an extravagant gesture of hospitality, and it did not go unnoticed. And evidently these three strangers were very aware of who did most of the work for this banquet, for they asked, "Where is your wife?" They knew what was going on. And she was, of course, not very far. She was just inside the tent, by the tent flap, listening to every word that was said. And it was at that point that Abraham and Sarah were told that she would have a son, despite their advanced age. Well, that's a tale for another day. We're not going to get into that. This story is about hospitality. This is about hospitality towards strangers, in which Abraham and Sarah meet God. This story is one about Abraham's inclination, his disposition toward hospitality, toward welcoming. It's about this habit of the heart of openness to the other that leads to meeting God. Our story from Luke looks at hospitality from a little different angle. Here we have Martha inviting Jesus into her home and proceeding to provide the food and the drink and everything that hospitality demands. And meanwhile, Mary sits and listens, not behind a tent flap, but and not even between serving. She just sits and listens. She is completely attentive to Jesus. As a little aside here, it's really no coincidence that this story comes immediately after the Good Samaritan story, because we have a sort of subtext, if you will, which is a suggestion that neither Mary nor the Samaritan were acting in ways that were the norms of societies. This wasn't what was expected by society, by the culture. But the suggestion underneath this is that, well, you know, if the customs of the culture get in the way of what is really important, maybe they're not that important. It's a suggestion that societal norms can sometimes get in the way of meeting God. Well, at any rate, Martha complains about Mary's behavior. And what I'd like you to notice in this story is that Jesus does not really reprimand her for her busy hospitality. Rather, he invites her. He invites her to a deeper hospitality, pointing out that her preoccupation with all these tasks that she was busily doing, that was getting in the way of her relating to the guests, pointing out that she was distracted in such a way that got in the way of the community of caring. It got in the way of the heart of hospitality. Our good intentions can sometimes get lost in the distractions that are around us, in the details. We get caught up in these details of serving others, and we lose the reason for the serving. We, of course, want things to go right. We want our guests to be served appropriately, and we want the food and the drink and everything fixed right, and all that is good and proper. Abraham, in our story today, certainly was plenty busy getting his feast prepared, but it's easy to begin to pay more attention to those details than to the people who are there. It might be better to offer what somebody termed scruffy hospitality, where less time is spent making everything perfect and more time is spent in talking and listening to the guests. Some of you may know that I volunteer with a program called Casa Alitas, which is a program for immigrants, mostly women and their kids, who come to our border and turn themselves into the Border Patrol, seeking asylum in the U.S. Most of them have a relative or somebody that they are going to somewhere in the United States. And immigration officials process them, and then they release them on their own recognizance to go to wherever it is they're going. But of course, immigration doesn't offer them transportation to wherever it is that they're going in the U.S. So with a kind of informal agreement that Casa Alitas has with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, they are released at Casa Alitas, and we take them in, and we feed them, and offer them a chance to bathe, and some clothes to change, and we help them prepare for the journey. We call their relatives and arrange for the tickets to be done, and all those kind of good things. Often, they spend the night or a couple of nights as these different kind of arrangements are made. For us volunteers, it's pretty easy to get caught up in these details. There are lots of details. We need to make sure they have food and drink. We need to get some clothes for them if they need those. We need to arrange with their relatives for bus tickets. We need to pull together some travel bags for them so they can, with food items and stuff they might need for what is often a 2 or 3 day bus trip. We try to sit down with them and outline in very broad terms the kind of legal proceedings that they're going to be facing and urge them to find a lawyer and try to get them some resources in those directions. And it is easy for us to get lost in the details and not really pay attention to the people, but only to those immediate needs. But when I have a chance to sit down and actually talk with people individually, I'm reminded of the point to all this activity. For example, a couple of weeks ago, there was a 92-year-old woman from El Salvador who came through. And she told me with tears in her eyes of how she was living alone in her town in El Salvador, and the gangs would come up and threaten her life and demand money from her, and she really didn't have that much, and this happened over and over again until finally she decided she had to leave. And she had a couple of her kids live in the U.S., so she decided she would come up and be with them and just abandon her house. And then there was this other woman, not 92 years old. That was an exception. I can't imagine the trip for a 92-year-old woman coming, traveling through Guatemala and Mexico all the way up to the U.S. But this other woman came from southern Mexico, and she too told me of the many, many incidences of violence that were taking place in her community, just one after the other after the other. And she too decided to leave. And she had kids and grandkids in the U.S., a daughter in particular in Phoenix, and her family. And so she came up also, escaping that violence. And I had a chance to talk with her about that and about immigration to the U.S. and the attitudes in the U.S. and about Casa Alitas and a number of other things as I drove her to the shuttle station in, I guess it's not South Tucson, it's south of South Tucson. Earlier, I had taken her to get her pesos changed into dollars, and I think she had maybe $60, but it was enough to get a shuttle ticket up to Phoenix. So she bought her ticket, and then she turned around and gave me $20. She gave me $20 and said, "Give this to somebody who's traveling across the country and needs to buy some food for the journey." She taught me hospitality. She taught me what this was all about. Because she had been in that Alita's house, and she had talked to people, and she knew that there were people there with kids who were going to Virginia or to Georgia or to Florida or to New York or wherever it is they were going. And it's a long journey on a Greyhound bus. So she gave me the $20 that she had left over. Hospitality, she knew, is about the community that is made in it. Hospitality is about relationships. The details, yes, they are important. The tasks need to be done to help them on their way, but it is in the relationships formed, whether those relationships are just for a few hours or a few days. It is in those relationships that we meet God. Hospitality is at its root about meeting with. It's about an authentic meeting with, not so much doing for. And this is, I think, what the story of Martha and Mary is all about, this deeper meaning of hospitality. This is why Saint Benedict understood hospitality as an important spiritual discipline. And he wrote it in his rule, quote, "All guests who present themselves are to be welcomed as Christ." What Saint Benedict urged his monks to do is to cultivate in themselves, in their lives, a disposition to hospitality, an inclination toward hospitality, a habit of heart of welcoming the other. Hospitality is a touchstone of the spiritual life. It is an openness to welcoming the other, whoever they may be, welcoming into a relationship. And in this, Benedict was just simply following the example of Jesus. He was imitating Christ because Jesus lived his life welcoming, did he not? His life demonstrated that disposition to be hospitable. When you think about all the many, many stories of Jesus, a lot of them take place when he is invited into somebody's home. And he willingly went, whatever that home might have been, he went along. And sometimes he knew that that home might be kind of hostile towards him. There were certainly many confrontations there. And so he began in these homes as a guest, and yet somehow in the process of his being there and interacting and his teaching and his healing, he kind of turns that around and he becomes the host. A host in somebody else's house as he offers something to them that they may or may not accept. At the feeding of the multitudes, he starts out as a host. He feeds all these people, and yet he is a guest because he brought nothing to this except himself. For Jesus, guest and host were all kind of the same thing, all kind of an attitude of welcoming and hospitality that were part of his life. His attitude, his disposition towards others says, live welcoming to the stranger. Open your lives to those around you. Embrace your brothers and sisters, and everybody are your brothers and sisters. Make that the habit of your heart. Now, this does not seem to be the dominant message that we hear in the world. I don't think, as I listen to the world, as I listen to our leaders, as I listen to the various things around the world, I don't hear that so much. What I hear is, don't welcome the stranger. Don't do that. It's dangerous. It's risky. Many around us, many of our leaders urge instead caution, suspicion. You don't know what that stranger, who that stranger is that you're welcoming. They are a potential threat. They will ruin the way, our way of life. They say it is much more prudent to cultivate, if you will, a disposition of suspicion and keep the other at arm's length. Caution, suspicion are more practical habits of the heart, they say. That will keep us more safe and secure. Well, that is a prevalent worldview. But you know, in this understanding of the world of reality, the world is made up of individuals who are kind of out to get whatever they can get and to take advantage of whatever they can take advantage of. And you never get to know people that way, do you? The other in this view is not your brother and sister. The other is after something that they shouldn't have. They will take something from you. The other is other, to be regarded with suspicion until proven trustworthy. It's only practical to live that way, they say. As I look around in the world, though, especially after the events of this last couple of weeks, couple of months, I think, well, what is this disposition of suspicion created? We have two African-American brothers killed by police, and we had five policemen shot in Dallas, and three more in Baton Rouge, I'm told, this morning. Somebody driving a truck through holiday revelers in France. We have all kinds of things going on, and I won't even try to list all the incidences. And at least part of the reason, it seems to me, for these things is this disposition towards suspicion. This caution that goes so far as to lash out before somebody else can get you. Do unto others before they can do to you, kind of attitude. That's the disposition of suspicion. And it does seem to me that this leads more often to destruction than it does to survival. But be that as it may, this habit of suspicion was the worldview in Jesus' time, just as it was a worldview in ours. But then Jesus came along, and love came to town. Jesus did not seem to be very interested in being practical or being safe. He was more interested in grace and in transformation and in meaningful relationships and in building community. He was not real big on practical survival stuff. He knew, I'm sure, that there is truth to the idea that this is risky. Not every encounter turns out well. Bad things happen when you live welcoming to all. But then I would suggest that bad things happen when you don't live that way either. He also knew that there was another risk in this living this life of hospitality. And it's a risk he urges us to take. Practicing hospitality may just change us. It may change our lives. When we are really listening to another person, when we are meeting them on a deeply personal level, we make ourselves vulnerable to being changed. Our lives may not be the same. The guest we start out serving may turn out to be the host that introduces us to a new way of living. A deep hospitality turns out to be a kind of mutual giving and receiving in ways we hadn't imagined before. That was true, I think, for Abraham and Sarah, wasn't it? This was the truth that Jesus was pointing to Martha. Deep hospitality can change us. The thing is that for Jesus, every encounter was an opportunity to love. It was an opportunity for authentic relationships to develop. Every encounter is an opportunity for the transformation of oneself and of others. Each encounter is where the reign of God comes to earth. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, the reading we had from the Gospel of Luke was that passage in which Jesus sends out like 70 people to go two by two throughout the area. And they were to preach and they were to enter people's homes and to heal and proclaim the kingdom. And part of his instructions in that passage was, whenever you enter a city and its people welcome you, eat and drink whatever they set before you. Heal and declare God's kingdom has come upon you. They are enjoined to accept hospitality and transform that hospitality into hospitality of their own, to take that opportunity to create a little community, to heal and to declare that God's kingdom has come upon you. God's kingdom has come upon you. Isn't God's kingdom where we meet God? Isn't that where God can find you? They said when hospitality is offered to strangers, God's kingdom has come upon you. Isn't that what hospitality is all about?